glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vinata Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharne Nivasesa Sanyavadi Paskachyade Satyamane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutam Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sri Sri Rupam Sarvajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sam Sajiva Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Sri Panchakalpa Tu Vishaki Pasandiya Patapti Tanam Pavani Vaishnava Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda This is February 23rd, 2014 in Ljubljana, Slovenia. And we're looking at the last part of Adilila, Chapter 5, The Glories of Lord Nityananda Balaram. So yesterday we talked about the ontological position of Lord Nityananda, how he is the master of the Sandini Shakti, that he is the basis of the whole spiritual world as well as the whole material world. He's the shelter. We talked yesterday specifically about how he's the shelter, the resting place of all living entities. And today we're looking at a lila, and then we're going to look at a very personal story with the author Krishnadas Kaviraj. So Krishnadas Kaviraj starts to explain how Lord Nityananda is Balaram in Krishna Lila and Lakshman in Ramchandra Lila, how he's assisting the Lord as his older brother or younger brother in these various pastimes. Then he starts telling a story about himself. He starts telling a story about how there was an arti going on in his house, and that his brother did not respect Lord Nityananda. His brother actually didn't respect the servant of Lord Nityananda, Miniketana Ramdas. So his brother had all respect for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he didn't have respect for Miniketana Ramdas, who was a servant of Lord Nityananda. And Krishnadas Kaviraj decided that he was going to rebuke his brother. So he told his brother, you're like to someone taking half a hen. Half a hen means you feed the mouth and you get the eggs from the back. So you cut off the feeding part, so you just get the eggs. That's the half a hen. And then, of course, you don't get anything because you've cut the hen in half. So he said, you're like taking half a hen, taking only Mahaprabhu and not taking Nityananda Prabhu. So evidently, Lord Nityananda was very pleased, and Lord Nityananda reciprocated by appearing before Krishnadas Kaviraj in a vision. And Krishnadas Kaviraj explains this vision. He gives a description of the body of Lord Nityananda appearing. Said, that night Lord Nityananda appeared to me in a dream. I fell at his feet. He then placed his own lotus feet upon my head. Arise, get up, he told me again and again. He had a glossy blackish complexion, and his tall, strong, heroic stature made him seem like Cupid. Beautifully formed hands, arms and legs, eyes like lotus flowers, silk cloth, silk turban, golden earrings, golden armlets and bangles, anklets on his feet, garland of flowers, sandalwood pulp, tilak, and movements nicer than a maddened elephant. So it's interesting, many times in the Shastra and in the words of the Acharyas, the movements of Vishnu, Krishna in here, Balaram Nityananda and Radharani, are often compared to elephants, sometimes baby elephants. Here, a maddened elephant. So a maddened elephant, of course, none of us really have experience of elephants at all, except in zoos, right? And in Mayapur, those are tame elephants. We don't really see wild elephants. And it's very rare that we would see a maddened elephant. Movements surpass those of a maddened elephant. So what a maddened elephant means, I'm sure you're familiar that among females, that the female of all mammals and birds and probably fish and reptiles, of most creatures, have periods of fertility. They go into what's called heat, and then the males of the species become very agitated to impregnate the females. So elephants, I believe they're the only creature, I might be wrong, but I believe they're the only creature where the male also goes into a kind of heat. So the female has the female elephant goes into heat, but also the male elephant goes into kind of heat. It's called, what's it called? So it starts with an H. I forget what it's called. Anyway, it happens at randomly. Like for the female, this happens regularly, but for the male, this happens randomly. The male elephant goes in must. That's what it's called. M-U-S-T, I think. The male goes into this must, and when the male goes into this state of madness, the male becomes completely uncontrollable. There's substances that start to drip from the forehead, and if the elephant was trained, the elephant loses all of its training and may even attack its trainer, and practically no restraints will hold this elephant when it's in must, even if strong chains, it will break out of them. And the elephant, generally elephants have like a harem, there'll be an old elephant who has females, but when a young elephant is in must, the old elephants get out of the way. Nobody will mess with the elephant in must. And the biologist's theory is that this allows the young elephants sometimes to spread their DNA around in the herd. That's their theory about it. So generally when people tame elephants, they don't want to let them go into must, because after they recover from this state, they have to be trained all over again. They lose all of their training. So they'll notice when the elephant is starting to show the first symptoms, and usually they starve them. They don't give them any food or water for like 24 or 48 hours, and it stops the procedure. But once you have, when you have an elephant in this state of these are the males, the young bull elephants in this state of, everybody gets out of the way. So of course in our life we have no experience of this at all. We don't have experience of wild elephants. We have hardly any experience of tame elephants. And I'm sure that none of us have ever experienced a maddened elephant. So when we have these analogies that the movements of Lord Nityananda surpass those of a maddened elephant, we have no idea what they're talking about. You know, it just we don't get any mental movie of this. And we find this analogies to elephants for quite frequently. Mahaprabhu says the Vaishnava Parad is like a maddened elephant, right? Destroying your garden. So kind of have some idea, what is this mad elephant? Of course, even an ordinary elephant, it's interesting also, I think, that the movements of the Lord and Srimati Radharani are compared to as graceful as elephants. You know, we think of elephants as this kind of large, cumbersome beast. But when they move with a certain kind of grace, even though they're very large, don't they? Yes? Lions also. Sometimes the Lord is compared to the movements of a lion. It's also a very graceful movement. Okay, his face was more beautiful than millions upon millions of moons. His teeth were like pomegranate seeds because of his chewing betel. His body moved to and fro, right and left, for he was absorbed in ecstasy. He chanted Krishna, Krishna in a deep voice. His red stick moving in his hand, he seemed like a maddened lion. So now he's being compared to a maddened lion, although lions don't have madness periods. Maybe lions become angry when they see a rhinoceros running away, I don't know. Again, these comparisons are given because at the time Krishna Das Kaviraj was writing this, people saw that. There were lions, there were wild lions at this time in Vrindavan. When people saw wild elephants and wild lions, they related to this. All around the four sides of his feet were bumblebees. His devotees, dressed like coward boys, surrounded his feet like so many bees and also chanted Krishna, Krishna. Some of them played horns and flutes, and others danced and sang. Thus I saw such opulence in Lord Nityananda's Swarup. I was overwhelmed with transcendental ecstasy, not knowing anything else. And Lord Nityananda smiled and spoke to me. Oh, my dear Krishna Das, do not be afraid. Go to Vrindavan, for there you will attain all things. After saying this, he directed me toward Vrindavan by waving his hand, then he disappeared with his associates. I fainted and fell to the ground. My dream broke, and when I regained consciousness, I saw that morning had come. I thought about what I had seen and heard and concluded that the Lord had ordered me to proceed to Vrindavan at once. That very second, I started for Vrindavan, and by his mercy, I reached there in great happiness. So what a servant, huh? You're told, do this, and you just immediately do it. Most of us are not quite like that, yes? We're told to do something, we think about it for a while. All right, so we're going to go through now, we're going to concentrate, that's the background for what we're discussing today. And we're going to go into the next 17 verses, which have within them a verse that is quite mysterious and impenetrable and scary and bewildering for most of us Hare Krishna devotees, but which, when the impenetrable layer is penetrated, will open the door to the higher realms of bhakti. So we're going to be chanting text 200, and somehow the pen is not very good. So I hope you can read it. Reminds me, Ayendra said that he himself was the personification of the useless flower offense. You know, that you're not supposed to offer a flower without a fragrance? So he said, that's what I'm like. I'm like a flower without a fragrance. So I often think of myself as a useless pen, probably because I use a lot of pens in my service. So this board reminds me, that's the kind of servant I am. I'm a very faint and useless pen. All right, so hopefully we can read this. Jai Jai Nityananda Nityananda Rama. Janara Kripate Painu Vrindavana Dama. Jai Jai Nityananda Nityananda Rama. Janara Kripate Painu Vrindavana Dama. Janhara Kripate.
Janhara Kripate Painu Vrindavana Dama.
Janhara Kripate Painu Vrindavana
Dama. Ladies. Nityananda, to Lord Nityananda, Nityananda Rama, to Lord Balaram, who appeared as Nityananda, Janhara Kripate, by whose mercy, Painu, I got Vrindavana Dhamma, shelter at Vrindavana. Okay, so again, he's just had this amazing dream, this amazing vision of Lord Nityananda and the cowherd boys. Lord Nityananda gives him an order, and he goes to Vrindavan, and then he gets to Vrindavan, and he's in great happiness, and he's saying, all glory to Lord Nityananda Balaram, by whose mercy I have attained shelter in the transcendental abode of Vrindavana. All glory, we're going to keep going on to text 217. All glory to the merciful Lord Nityananda, by whose mercy I have attained shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Sanatana. By his mercy, I have attained the shelter of the great personality, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami. And by his mercy, I found the refuge of Sri Swarup Damodar. Actually, Krishnadas Kaviraj went, he was living by Radhakund. He went to Radhakund, and his bhajan kirti was right next to that of Raghunath Das Goswami. By the mercy of Sanatana Goswami, I have learned the final conclusions of devotional service. And by the grace of Srila Rupa Goswami, I have tasted the highest nectar of devotional service. All glory to the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, by whose mercy I have attained Sri Radha Govinda. Does he sound pretty ecstatic in these verses? He's sort of overwhelmed, isn't he? It's like, wow, I've gotten Vrindavan, and I got Rupa and Sanatana, and I got Raghunath Das Goswami and Swarup Damodar, and by Sanatana and Rupa, I'm learning about devotional service, and I got Radha Govinda. And he's all excited. Right? He's really overwhelmed. All right, now here we go. Here we go. This is part of his ecstasy. This is part of his... Like, you've got to put this in context. I think the main reason that we really struggle with these verses is that we take them out of context. Right? So you've got to get the context. He's seeing this vision of Lord Nityananda. He's ordered to go to Vrindavan. He immediately goes to Vrindavan. And then he's experiencing that he has the mercy of the Goswamis and that he's received Radha Govinda. Now, I am more sinful than Jagai and Mudai, and even lower than the worms in the stool. Like, what? Anyone who hears my name loses the results of his pious activities. Anyone who utters my name becomes sinful. Well, we're all in a lot of trouble because we say his name all the time, so... Now, those two verses are bewildering, aren't they? I am lower, I'm more sinful than Jagai and Mudai. How is he more sinful than Jagai and Mudai? Jagai and Mudai were raping, stealing, murdering. We have no record that Krishnadas Kaviraj was raping, stealing, and murdering. And more sinful. And even lower than the worms in the stool. That's about as low as you can get, isn't it? We say one should be lower than the straw on the street, but I think the worms in the stool are even lower than the straw on the street. He's lower than that. And he's saying that if you just hear my name, you lose the result of your pious activities and become sinful. Now here's the key, text 207. Who in this world but Lord Nityananda could show his mercy to such an abominable person as me? That's the verse that gives us the key to understanding this. Because he's intoxicated. Now he's saying, why? Why would he show mercy to me? Because he's intoxicated by ecstatic love as an incarnation of mercy. He does not distinguish between the good and the bad. So he's not giving me mercy because I deserve it. He's giving me mercy because he's so ecstatic he doesn't know what he's doing. And he's just giving out mercy indiscriminately. He delivers all those who fall down before him. Therefore he's delivered such a sinful and fallen person as me. So he doesn't say, well, you know, it was because I was so great in chastising my brother. I mean, he mentions that Lord Nityananda was pleased with him for chastising his brother, but he doesn't mention as if that gives him some sort of right. Now, although I am sinful and I am the most fallen, he has conferred upon me the lotus feet of Sri Rupa Goswami. I am not fit to speak all these confidential words about my visiting Lord Madan Gopal and Lord Govinda. Lord Madan Gopal, the chief deity of Vrindavan, is the enjoyer of the Ras dance and is directly the son of the king of Raja. He enjoys the Ras dance with Srimati Radharani, Sri Lalita, and others. He manifests himself as the Cupid of Cupids. This is what Krishnadas Kaviraj is experiencing. So he's experiencing now, by the mercy of the Goswamis, that he's getting a vision of Madan Gopal and Govinda. Wearing yellow garments and decorated with a flower garland, Lord Krishna, appearing among the gopis with his smiling lotus face, looked directly like the charmer of the heart of Cupid. With Radha and Lalita serving him on two sides, he attracts the hearts of all by his own sweetness. The mercy of Lord Nityananda showed me Sri Madan Mohan and gave me Sri Madan Mohan as my lord and master. He granted to one as low as me the sight of Lord Govinda. Words cannot describe this, nor is it fit to be disclosed. So here we see the manifestation of the third verse of the Sikshastika, right? Trinadapi Sadichinata or Iva Sadichinata. Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Siddhahari, especially the first two lines where he's saying, to be lower than the straw in the street and more tolerant than a tree. Lower than the straw in the street means if you're stepped on, you don't get back up again. You know, generally out in the world, we praise what we call resilience, that if you're stepped on, you do get back up again. And many years ago, we went through one of our innumerable difficulties with running a school, and I remember that Yogeshwarpa was talking to me on the phone, and he said, Urmila, you're like a cork. You all know what a cork is? It floats. It's like they put in the top of wine bottles. And he said, you're like a cork. He said, even if you're pushed down, you always float back up. And for many years, that sustained me whenever I went through any difficulties. I thought, oh yeah, yeah, I'm like a cork. But lower than the grass, you don't get back up. More tolerant than a tree means if you need something, like a tree, if it's thirsty, it doesn't cry, water, water. If you need something, you just tolerate. And then the tree is giving, 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 giving. The tree gives shade, fruit, flowers, so many things, medicines. Giving, 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 and then somebody comes and cuts down the tree. And the tree doesn't say, but I gave you so much, what are you doing? Generally, we do the opposite of all these things. Generally, if someone kicks us, we get back up. Usually, we kick them. And if we need things, we complain. I need this, I need that, give me this, give me that. And if we give so many things to others, we expect to be taken care of. We say, I gave you this, I gave you this, I gave you this, I gave you this. Why are you mistreating me? So when we read that it's required, if we want to actually chant Hare Krishna, that we have to be like that, I think that most of us say, yes, 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 but we run as far away from it as we possibly can. So we make some show. We were really good in the Hare Krishna movement about making a show. Oh, Prabhu, I'm so fallen. You know, I don't have any purity. I don't have any devotion. We're really good at that. We have a whole culture of humble talk. But then our dealings with each other are often not exactly like that. You know, I've given so much. Why aren't I taken care of? You're a rascal. Well, you're a bigger rascal. I mean, I was just recently dealing with a thing between devotees like that. Where one devotee, you know, said to their superior, why are you so harsh and cold in your dealings? And then the superior said to the subordinate, me, harsh and cold? You're simply spreading a network of pain anywhere you go. They really had this conversation. So this is the reality of what tends to go on. So we say, yes, humble, humble, humble. Yes, yes, humble, humble, humble. But then we read the Trinadapi verse and we go, I'm not having anything to do with that. Let me read this. I'm more sinful, you know. What is this again? I'm more sinful than Jadhai and Mudhai. I'm lower than the worm in the stool. Anyone who hears my name loses the results of his pious activities. Anyone who utters my name becomes sinful. And internally we're thinking, I hope I never have to say that and mean that. And we just feel like we don't mean it. I'm more sinful than Jadhai and Mudhai. Anybody here feel more sinful than Jadhai and Mudhai? I mean, I'm a nice person. You know, I stole a little wooden spoon from school when I was a kid, but, you know, I mean, I'm a nice person. I'm not more sinful than Jadhai and Mudhai. Lower than the worms in the stool? Lower than the worms? I'm not lower than the worms in the stool. I'm a human being. And I'm civilized, and I'm from America, you know. I mean, I'm not like that. So we don't really take this on. We don't. But I think the reason we don't take it on is, first of all, we don't understand how important it is. And second of all, we don't really understand what it is. So the first thing is understanding how important it is. So without developing this humility, going to the higher stages of bhakti is just simply not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. This is explained in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, right? At the very end, when Gopakumara is going to Vrindavan, ready to go to Goloka Vrindavan, and Narada and Uddhava are talking, and they say, you know, if unless he develops humility, he's not going to be able to enter Vrindavan. That prema develops along with humility. That however much humility is there, that's how much prema is there. That you can't actually have love without an equal amount of humility. And the thing I generally mention is the Bhaktivinoda Thakur equates the Trinadapi verse to entering into steadiness in bhakti. to getting out of the very unsatisfying, very difficult, Prabhupada says, hard struggle with determination, unsteady stage of bhajan kriya, that to get from where you're always attacked by the modes of passion that you're in. So to come to the mode of goodness, to become steady, to become happy, to be able to chant all the time, to start tasting, to come to ruchi, to start really tasting Krishna consciousness, one has to walk through this doorway of being lower than the straw on the street and more tolerant than tree, and ready to give all respects to others and not expecting respect in return, although the last two lines we're not going to so much discuss today. So if you have to walk through that door, it must be something wonderful. It's got to be. Krishna's not going to ask us to walk through this door, demand that we walk through this door, and say that this humility is part of love if it's really something miserable, if it's something that's going to bring us suffering. Suridam Sarvabhutanam, Krishna's our best friend. If he's suggesting some medicine for us, it must be a medicine that will bring us health and happiness, not that will bring us suffering. Because when we think about this sort of thing, we think, well, if I become like that, everybody will just step on me, right? If I'm lower than the straw, then everybody will step on me. If I'm a worm in the stool, everybody will flush me down the toilet. You know, I mean, that I'll be mistreated, I'll be misused, then I'll suffer. I'm already suffering enough. And if I do this, then I'll suffer more. But Krishna's not like that. He's not going to give us something. So what is it? What is it? So I give this example always in relationship to humility. So, you know, you've got 20 euros in your pocket, all right? So you go to the shop and you buy something and it's worth 20 euros. How do you feel? How do you feel? You spend 20 euros and what you get is worth 20 euros. How do you feel? Okay. So you have 20 euros, you go to the shop, you buy something, and after you get home, somebody said, you can buy that for 5 euros. That's not worth 20 euros. How do you feel? You feel stupid, yeah, angry, frustrated. You spend 20, you go after 20 euros, you go to the shop, you buy something, and it's worth 100 euros. You got it for only 20. How do you feel? You feel great. Our happiness is an inverse relation to our feelings of deserving. Our happiness is an inverse relation to our feelings of deserving. Our happiness is an inverse relation to our feelings of deserving. The more we feel we deserve something, the less pleasure we get from it. The less we feel we deserve something, the more pleasure we get from it. As soon as we think we deserve anything, we are eliminating a lot of our happiness. Our happiness is an inverse relation to how much we feel we deserve something. You can see how much this idea of deserving damages our relationships. You know, if the husband says to the wife, I deserve for you to cook for me, I deserve for you to greet me at the door with foot wash, you know, then even if she does it, it doesn't give him any happiness. Because, well, I just deserve it. You know, if the man cuts the grass and oils the hinges on the squeaky door and cleans the whole kitchen and pays all the bills, and the wife, you know, says to his wife, I cut the grass and fixed the door and paid the bills, and she says, oh. Because she thinks, well, he's the husband. Of course he has to do that. That's his job. I'm his wife. I deserve it. It doesn't give her any happiness. She's no happiness from it at all. And when we get less than what we deserve, not only do we not get any happiness, we get pain. Right? So if the man thinks that he deserves a 4-course meal every night, and one night the wife serves him only a 3-course meal, then he can't even enjoy it at all. Right? It's just, what is this? Only 3 courses. And we see this in our Hare Krishna movement all the time. You know, I gave so much to the movement and I'm not being treated properly. Always, this is because we're thinking, I deserve. Now, we're afraid that if I don't think I deserve, then I'll get nothing. We're thinking, if I just say, well, I deserve nothing, then I'll get nothing. We think the only reason we get something is because we yell for it and we say, I deserve it, I'm wonderful. That's not why we get things. First of all, we get things because of our karma, and we're going to get things because of our karma, whether we yell and scream about it or not. If you're humble or you yell and scream, you're still going to get them. It just doesn't matter. You're going to get them anyway. Now, the universe is very well run, and anything you've karmically paid for, you're going to get. And anything you haven't karmically paid for, you're not going to get. So having the mood of deserving isn't going to make any difference. And then if you say, well, we're not under karma, karma adinir dhati kintu chabhakti bhajam, well, then we're being taken care of by God. And I think he knows what he's doing. Of course, I don't think he knows what he's doing. That's why I'm in the material world. But, you know, he does know what he's doing. And Lord Vishnu asks Maharaj Prithu, what would you like? And Maharaj Prithu says, you know, why don't you give me what's best for me? And he said a number of things. He said, don't tempt me with material things. He said, why don't you give me millions of ears so I can hear all the devotees glorifying you? But he also said, you know what's best for me. So this is trust. This is actually part of the Sakya, not Sakya Ras, but the Sakya Anga of Sadhana Bhakti, that I trust you. I trust you. This is one of also the two of the six principles of surrender. Krishna, you're going to maintain me, and Krishna, you're going to protect me. That whatever is best for me, you're going to give me. Not because I deserve, but because you love me. Parents don't give children something because the children, when you have a little tiny baby, you're not feeding the baby and changing the baby and bathing the baby because the baby deserves anything. They haven't done anything to deserve anything. You do it just because you love them. There's no other reason. You know, it's just simply because you love them. So Krishna is taking care of us just because he loves us. And we're also afraid that if I have this mood of humility, that then I won't feel that I have any value or any meaning. So we're afraid I won't get what I need, and we're afraid my life will have no value. I mean, worms and stool, do we really think of them as having much value? I mean, of course, I'm sure they do. Because otherwise the world would be full of stool if the worms didn't eat it. But it seems, you know, I wouldn't have much value. But we have value. Our value really is only that Krishna loves us. Otherwise, frankly, materially, we don't have any value. That's the honest truth. Is that on a material level, we have no value. At all. Nothing. Just like nothing. At all. When we die, nobody will care. Or somebody will put our picture up by the Vyasa-san maybe for a little while, and then on the wall for a little while longer. And then after a while, people say, who's that? Do you follow? It's always, it'll be over. It'll be over. I always give the example that generally people don't know the names of their great-great-grandparents. Do we know the names of our great-great-grandparents? So that means our grandchildren's grandchildren, they won't know our name. That's our own family. When we die, we'll be a little sentence in the newspaper. That's it, one sentence for your whole life. So-and-so died today. They leave behind a wife and kids. The funeral is going to be at 2 o'clock. And that's it. You know, I mean, if you're really a big deal in ISKCON, you might get a couple paragraphs and back to God. Maybe. Maybe. Materially, with no significance. Whatever we do is going to be finished. You can build a big building, a few hundred years, it's gone. There's no value. But our value is that Krishna loves us. That Krishna is happy with our service. That's our value. So by thinking I deserve this and I deserve that, we're not going to artificially create value where there is any. So what's happening here is Krishna Das Kaviraj is getting this great mercy from Lord Nityananda. I mean, that's pretty amazing mercy. Would we like to get that mercy from Lord Nityananda? I would. Wouldn't you like to get that? Wouldn't you like to have a dream? But Lord Nityananda shows with up walking like a maddened elephant, surrounded by his coward boys, and completely in ecstasy. Everybody like that? Yes. Now, if you thought you deserve it, though, you probably wouldn't like it very much. Well, of course Lord Nityananda is showing up. I mean, I've been chanting for so many years. I mean, come on. It's about time. It's about time you showed up. But then you don't relish it. Just like when Mahaprabhu was in the 21-hour ecstasy, and he wouldn't see Mukunda. And finally, he agreed to see Mukunda. And then Mukunda said, the real benediction isn't seeing you, the real benediction is serving you. And there's this nice conversation in Chaitanya Bhagavat between the Lord and Mukunda about all these demons that saw the Lord. You know, when the demons see the Lord, they don't appreciate. Even if they somewhat appreciate. Like Kaliya thought, oh yeah, he's kind of beautiful. And also Kaliyavana also. They thought, oh yeah, this is, he's beautiful. Narada Muni told me about him. But their mood is, I want to kill him. They don't see the vision of the Lord as a benediction. They see the vision of the Lord as a disturbance. Why? It's the same Lord. We might think, you know, well, why don't I see the Lord? Maybe I don't see the Lord because I wouldn't appreciate. Do we like to give gifts to people who don't appreciate? Is that a pleasant experience? If you give a gift to someone and they go, that's it? Couldn't you have done more than that? I mean, do you feel encouraged? No? Or if you give a gift to someone and they say, okay, thanks, yeah, it was my birthday, I expected it. I mean, how do you feel? Soon after we entered the Vanaprastha Ashram, I gave a lot of my jewelry to various people. And one time I visited one of them and I saw, it was, I mean, it was real jewelry. Some of it was from my mother with lapis lazuli and some of it was 22 karat gold. Nice jewelry. And I went to their house and it was on the floor mixed with dust and toys. Do you think I gave that person gifts again? No. Right? So how much we value a gift, how much pleasure we get from a gift, again, is in inverse proportion to our feeling of deservedness. So Krishnadas Kaviraj is doing both of these things at one time. Wow, look at what I got, and I'm so full, and so it's really amazing. You follow? He's saying the difference between himself and what he's received is as big as it gets. He can't make it any bigger. He's trying to have the maximum amount of difference between who he is and what he got. What's that going to do to your ecstasy? Magnify it by billions and billions of times. And then you're going to feel grateful, aren't you? Yes? If I'm absolutely undeserving of the most incredible, amazing, highest possible gift, then what am I going to feel toward the giver? Gratitude? Love? Yes? If I deserve it, do I feel any love? I don't feel any love at all. And if it's less than what I deserve, I feel contempt. Huh? I deserved 50 preparations, and you've only given me 28. You. I'm feeling love for you. Right? I just feel contempt. You foolish person. Not giving me the bare minimum I deserve. Right? And if I just get exactly what I deserve, it's like nothing. It doesn't mean anything. I deserve 50 preps and you give me 50 preps. So what? I don't have contempt, but it's just nothing. It's only when I think I deserve to fast. If I think I don't even deserve to be fed, I'm a criminal. And if you give me khichdi, I'm happy. You feel? I'm ecstatic. Wow, you gave me khichdi. Oh, I love you. So therefore, humility and love go together. And humility is the key to joy. One cannot have joy with pride. You can't. It's gone. I mean, you have a certain sort of twisted rasa. I'm great. How much happiness are you going to get from that? Because it's a lie. It's not even true. How great are we, you know, Hare Krishna? You know, you're great. Well, of course I'm great. You know, there's not much there. It's really, what a shame. So, of course, we can experiment with this. You don't have to believe me. Or Krishna Das Kaviraj. Prachakshyavagamam dharmam susukam kartamavyam. Should be experienced. Don't keep this theory. And I'm talking to myself here more than any of you. And we don't have to stay on the platform of just lip service to humility. Jai, jai, humility, jai, jai, humility. You're just such a harsh and cold person. And jai, jai, humility. And I'm the only one who knows what's in Prabhupada's books. And jai, jai, humility. We don't have to keep going on like that. You know, I remember getting this email sent to 10,000 people many years ago from one devotee. This is what it says in the Shastra, and that's Krishna's opinion. And I thought, no, it's your interpretation, and it's your opinion. So we don't have to keep going on like that. We can experiment, and if we're not ready to just jump in and say that we're lower than worms in stool and more sinful than Jughai and Madhi, if that's a little much for us right now, if we don't really feel that. By the way, why is he saying that? He really feels that way. Now, is he stupid? He knows the crimes Jughai and Madhi committed, and he knows he didn't commit those crimes, so is there something wrong with his mind? No, because if we reject Krishna, we are the most sinful. You can't get more sinful than rejecting Krishna. You just can't. The specific manifestations of how you reject Krishna, in one sense, are irrelevant. I mean, materially, they're relevant in terms of, are you going to go to hell or are you going to go to heaven? You're going to have a diseased body or a healthy body. They're irrelevant on the illusory platform. But on the ultimate platform, anybody who offends Krishna is the most sinful. I mean, Krishna's giving us everything. Right, in the talk between, this is what I'm slowly working on preparing for the Vaishnavi retreat. The talk between Krishna and the gopis, we're talking about the different kinds of reciprocations. Who reciprocates? Why Krishna doesn't always reciprocate? So the worst is the ungrateful person, the guru drooler. You know, someone gives you so much and you just smack them in the face. You insult them. Right? So Krishna's giving us everything. He's our life air. He's the sunlight. He's the taste of the food. He's everything. Everything. It's Krishna's giving us. And then if we reject him, if we're mean to him, if we're envious of him, how can you be more sinful than that? It's not possible. Whether you manifest that sinfulness by murdering people or whatever, you're in the category of the most sinful. So he's really feeling like that. He has to really feel like that. It can't just be lip service. Otherwise, he wouldn't experience the love and the ecstasy. So if we want to just at least start with this, if we want to start an experiment and see, does it make us happy? Because as we start moving away from the deserve position, as we start moving towards the less and less and less deserve, then we'll start feeling more and more happiness. And it's that experience that will encourage us that, wow, this humility stuff is really tasty. So some suggestions for what we could do is, first of all, just make a decision that I'm not going to defend my pride and my ego at all ever to anybody under any circumstances. That we can defend our body, someone's trying to kill you, you're welcome, we can defend ourselves, we can defend our mind, we can put our mind in situations where we're likely to remember Krishna, we can defend our spiritual life, not associate with Maya bodies and so forth. But not our ego. If someone says you're wrong, you're a fool, just be quiet. Just try it. You're a fool. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to say, yes, I'm a fool. You don't have to say, no, you're a bigger fool. You don't have to say, well, actually, let me tell you how intelligent I am. And just say anything. Okay. I'm a fool. Now, especially when somebody accuses us of something we didn't do, that we can think, well, okay, I didn't do this, but I've done so many other things that nobody's accused me of. Isn't that a fact? Who here has done something wrong that, as of now, no one has yet accused you of doing? So if somebody accuses me of something wrong that I didn't do, so I can make up for it. Right? And do we sometimes get praised for something we didn't do? Who here has ever gotten praised for something they didn't do? Did we complain? Probably not. We didn't say, I really had nothing to do with that. So if we can be quiet when we're unjustly praised, why can't we be quiet when we're unjustly criticized? Right? We can say, well, okay, that's for all that list of things I did wrong that nobody's found out about yet. May they never find out about it. And let that criticism be for those things. All right. And the basic principle that people are criticizing me for. That's probably true. Maybe I didn't do that specific thing. But do I have the fault that would lead to that specific thing? Well, sure. Of course, sometimes it's necessary to give information to correct the situation if somebody else would suffer. So if someone's wrongly accusing you, and if the truth is not known, somebody else would suffer, then one has to say, well, this is the truth, to defend somebody else. But we don't need to defend ourselves. Isn't that cool? You just like let go of it and say, I'm just not going to defend my false ego. Didn't we come to the Hare Krishna movement to eliminate our false ego? Wasn't that why we walked in the door? Hey, here I am. I want to get rid of my false ego. Okay, we're going to take a piece of it away today. No! Does that make any sense? Can you imagine that? You know, you go to a doctor and you say, I have this tumor. Please get rid of it. He says, okay, hold out your arm. No! That's madness, isn't it? Madness, yes? We're saying, I want to get rid of my false, I want to get rid of this false identity that's causing me all this pain and suffering. Krishna says, okay, here's somebody that's going to knock off a big chunk of it. You're this, and you're this, and you did this, and you did that, and you're the other. And you're like, Jai, thank you, Krishna. Just knocked off a big piece of that business. Try it. And then the other thing one can try is depending on Krishna for one's needs. That doesn't mean that if we have a job, you don't go to your job. Although there are devotees like that. There's that python that Prahlad Maharaj met, that python-type devotee. He was just lying on the ground. He wasn't even moving. And all of his needs just came to him. But Srila Prabhupada did not suggest that we all become like pythons lying in the woods. That wasn't his suggestion. Of course, there's Madhavendra Puri also, who didn't even beg. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begged. That's interesting. Or he had his devotees who traveled with him. They begged for him when he was traveling. But Madhavendra Puri didn't beg, and Krishna supplied all of his needs. So we may go to our job, we may have a job, or whatever, some means of maintenance, which one is supposed to have, especially in the Grihastha Ashram. But we should understand Krishna's providing for my needs. We can give up our anxiety. We'll talk about this more. Which day am I meeting with the old people? Tuesday, I'm meeting with the old people? Yes, they're asking me because I'm now one of them. So on Tuesday, I'll be meeting with the old people. That includes me. And we'll be talking about peace instead of worry. How to give up anxiety. And one of the things we'll be meditating on is how Krishna meets my needs. So, you know, when the false ego pops up and said, you're getting less than what you deserve, you say, Krishna's going to take care of my needs. Krishna's taking care of my needs. Krishna's taking care of my needs. Krishna's taking care of my needs. And if you don't like English, then you can say yoga kshema vaham yaham. Right? I have my own little Urmila mantra. Krishna's always meeting all of my needs in his own wonderful way. But if you don't like Urmila's mantra, you can use Krishna's mantra, which is yoga kshema vaham yaham. And whenever you get what, you know, whenever we get what we think is less than we deserve, which happens to me several times a day, that something happens and I think, I deserve more than this, and just, okay, Krishna, you're supplying all of my needs. Krishna, you're supplying all of my needs. Krishna, you're supplying all of my needs. I'm really a criminal. I'm a universal criminal. What do I deserve? What do I deserve? I always give the example of flowers. The government doesn't give flowers to the criminals, do they? Is there any government in the world that sends flowers into the prison? Every criminal gets, you know, a vase of roses in the prison, so they serve the criminals halva and gulab jamuns and puris. You ever heard of such a prison? Well, here we are. We're in the prison. We're in the material world, and we get gulab jamuns and halva. Right? We get not just apples, we get apples and oranges and bananas, and there's so many kinds of bananas and so many kinds of apples. So yeah, I'm a criminal. And still Krishna's giving me flowers. And of course, to give others, if somebody mistreats me, to give them due process, not to just assume that the definition of a demon is someone who mistreats me. That's often how we define demon. If somebody's not nice to me, then there must be a demon. Interesting idea. So to give due process to others, to treat others with respect. And then one can tolerate any circumstances. In such a situation, one is no longer the slave of one's circumstances. one is then free. Isn't that nice? Wouldn't it not be nice to be free? Prabhupada says it's the need of the soul. So then one becomes free. Then no circumstances can put me in anxiety, no other person can put me in anxiety, and one will start to feel great love and gratitude for Krishna just for having breath. Just for the things that most of us definitely take for granted is I deserve to breathe. Why? I don't deserve to breathe. I deserve to lie dormant in the body of Mahavishnu eternally as a criminal. Why do I deserve to have a body to fulfill my desires and engage in bhakti? I don't. It's just kindness. It's simply only kindness. There's nothing that a rebellious soul can do to deserve having a body in order to facilitate our material desires and give us a platform for bhakti. You know, if I were God, I would take all the rascal criminals and put them in, you know, suspended animation eternally. I wouldn't give them a whole world to fulfill their desires. Do we do that with our enemies? If somebody's envious of you, do you give them what they want? Do you do that? If somebody wants to steal from you, do you let them steal from you? Do you give them stuff? I'm not very kind. So Krishna is very, very kind. So then it becomes so exciting. I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai, and still I got a vision of Lord Nityananda. Wow! It's part of the excitement. It's part of the ecstasy. It has to be. It has to be. Because one's happiness is in inverse proportion to one's feeling of deservingness. Questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions. Oh, tomorrow, Krishna willing, we're going to have a multimedia presentation on Adi 6 on Advaita Acharya. It'll also pull some things, I think, from Adi 17, but it's like half on Adi 6 and half on Adi 17. So questions, comments, chastisements. Yes?
Sometimes, you know, before Krishna consciousness, I notice a lot of people outside, they talk about low self-esteem, like in the sense that one does not value himself, his own life, and it's treated like a sickness, like a symptom of depression and so on. So I'm just wondering, in this context, in Krishna consciousness, would such attitude towards oneself be treated in a positive way?
Okay. So out in the world, I'm just repeating your question. So out in the world, people consider low self-esteem like a sickness, like part of depression. Right? And
there's a difference, then what is this difference between...
So what is the difference between... I'm just repeating. I was asked to repeat all the questions. So what's the difference between this material low self-esteem, which is depression, and what we're talking about? Okay, well, depression is in the mode of ignorance. Depression is I'm so low and I don't deserve anything, but you don't notice anything wonderful around you. It doesn't have the other side. So this has both sides. How wonderful Krishna is and how low I am. It's not one-sided. That's why I kept talking about the context. You can't look at it, you can do whatever you want. But I mean, if you take these two verses, I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai, I'm lower than the worm in the stool, anyone who says my name becomes sinful, and you think that that's the only thing that Krishna Das Kaviraj says, then it is mode of ignorance depression. I'm just so low, I don't deserve anything, I have no value, I'm not going to get out of bed. But it's in context. He has two verses like this, and then he's got what? 20 verses. I got to see Rupa Goswami, I got Raghunath Das Goswami, I've seen Krishna, I've got to go to Vrindavan, I got Lord Nityananda. You've got 20 of those verses, and he's got two of the, and I'm so low. So it's not just I'm so low. That doesn't please anybody. Krishna's not pleased with that. We're not pleased with that. If someone offends me and they just come and say, Urmila, I'm so fallen, I'm so low. Like, can you just get on with life, please? But if someone comes and says, you know, Urmila, I really offended you and I'm really fallen and I'm really low and I'm so grateful, for your kindness, even though I offended you. Thank you so much. That's wonderful, isn't it? Isn't that what you want the people who've offended you to say to you? Who here has someone in their life who's offended them? You've never, one's ever offended you. That's pretty cool. All right. Who here has someone who's offended you who still hasn't apologized? All right. What would you like that person to do? What would you like them to do? Do you want them to just say, I'm a terrible person. I'm just so fallen. I'm like a worm in the stool. You must hate me. That's not what I want them to say. What do I want them to say? You know, if it's a really bad offense, and I don't know about you, but I've had some people who've done some pretty heavy-duty things to me. You know, if somebody comes and says, wow, Romila, I really hurt you. I broke your... You know, I want them to tell me how they hurt me. I broke your trust. I cheated you. I lied to you. I told you you could depend on me, and you couldn't. And I'm really disappointed. I'm really low. And still, you're welcoming me, and still you love me, and still you're willing to be my friend. Is there, you know... That's what I'd like to hear. And if I heard that, my heart would melt, yes, wouldn't it? So that's what melts Krishna's heart. We got both. Because Krishna is loving us, my dear friends. Even if we don't get this vision of Lord Nityananda with the cowherd boys, maybe some of you here have had such a vision. One of my good friends just wrote that she just had this dream where she was dancing with Krishna. So even if, you know, even if you haven't had such dreams and haven't had such visions, how many gifts are we getting in life? As I said, you know, just that we're getting flowers. I mean, isn't that cool? Like Krishna, even though I'm so low and I'm so offensive, I offend Krishna many, many times a day, just to be very frank, and still Krishna's giving me flowers. So you have to have both. You have to have both. See, if you just have one, if you just have Krishna's giving me flowers, then well, so what? So Krishna's giving me flowers. Of course you should give me flowers. I'm sitting around the Vyasasana. I'm supposed to get flowers. You don't want that. What's that at? And where do you want the...
I'm just a worm. Step on me and I'll just stay down, you know?
Both different. That's both the mode of ignorance. Yeah. But wow, I'm just this little worm. I mean, I'm really a little worm. And Krishna's having me give me flowers. And he's letting me talk about Chaitanya Charitamrita. Woohoo! You see? Is that all right? And so you have to have both. And they have to be together. Don't just... Keep them together. That's love. You can't have, you have to be together with love. It has always be like that. Krishna thinks like this. Krishna thinks like this. Sorry, I'm going to keep talking about this stuff because this is what I'm preparing, just how it is. So Krishna says to the gopis, he says, you gave up everything for me. You gave up your mothers and fathers and mother-in-law and father-in-law and your husbands. And you gave up all religious principles, but I didn't. He said, I didn't give up Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj. I didn't give up the coward boys. He said, I say, Ayatamam Prabhajante, I'm going to respond, but I can't. Of course, there's Mahaprabhu, he does. He takes sannyas. But he says, I can't respond. He said, I'm in your debt. Krishna says to the gopis, you've given me more than I deserve. You understand? Do you follow? Krishna doesn't say, well, I'm God. Of course you're supposed to give everything to me. So what? That's not his mood. Then there'd be no love. How would Krishna feel any love? He says, you've given me more than I deserve. He said, you've given me more than I've given you. Of course, that's ridiculous. But that's his mood. That's Krishna's mood. And then the gopis start thinking, oh, we asked all these questions of Krishna to criticize him. But Krishna left us to glorify us and to glorify how much love we had from even his separation. Therefore, Krishna has given us more than we've given him. And then they felt very grateful. So even Krishna's like that. Krishna says, Patram pushpam palam trayam yome bhakti priyachati tadaham bhakti paritam ashrami prayatma. Krishna's grateful for a little water. He's grateful for one flower, but a little water. How are you going to make anybody, is anybody going to be satisfied with a little water? You go to your wife, here's a glass of water. Where's this glass of water? Where's my diamond jewelry? Krishna's satisfied with water. He feels grateful. It's one of Krishna's qualities is he's grateful. My God, Krishna's grateful if you just say Sinarama. That's amazing. That's really amazing. One time in your life you say Sinarama, and you could be a cow killer and you're going to take birth as a human being. That's pretty grateful. Yes? Jamil was a sinful person. He wasn't even talking to Krishna. He was talking to his son. I mean, again, if I were God, I'd say, well, what does this have to do with me? You're talking to your kid. And you're just a criminal. Krishna's very grateful. Krishna doesn't have the attitude, oh, these rebellious souls, these rascal rebellious souls, they have to become 100% pure before I'm going to have anything to do with them. See, it's not how Krishna's acting at all. That no matter how offensive someone is and how much of a criminal they are, if they just say, oh, Narayana, I was with Prabhupada in 75 in Philadelphia. And, the devotees, Prabhupada was giving class on this verse, and the devotees were reading from Prabhupada's manuscripts. So they, when they read the verse, they said, Ajamila called out three times, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. And Prabhupada says, what is this three times? He said, I did not say three times. He said, oh, Narayana. He said, once is sufficient. So Krishna's like that. Is that all right? Do you understand the difference? See, this is Maya's song. Maya's song is, don't be humble, it's low self-esteem, and you'll be depressed and mentally ill. That's her little song. Don't do it. Talk about it, but don't do it, because then you'll be depressed and mentally ill. She's really good at these little songs. She has all these little songs that she sings. Anybody else?
Just like to, I read in an article of Gurdwinda Swami Maharaj, and he is explaining how this Trinada Pisunichana verse, it's four components of a pot in our heart to catch the mercy of Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if we don't have these four components, we have holes in our pot and all the mercy just goes out from the pot.
Yes.
And if we have, then we can catch the mercy.
Very nice. So I'm just going to repeat this again. So you said you were listening to a lecture of Gaur Govinda Maharaj, and he said the four parts of the Trinada Pisunichana verse are like four parts of a pot, and if any part is missing, it's like a hole. You can understand that, right? It's not that Lord Nityananda is cruel, and he's saying, oh, you got a part missing. But we don't have the capacity, because as soon as we think that we deserve, we don't have the capacity to hold on to that. It doesn't mean anything to us. We don't see it as valuable. Can you follow? Everybody follow? If I get something that I think is less than what I deserve, I don't see the thing as valuable, and therefore I don't keep it. Correct? Yes? The only way to keep something is if I see that something is much more than what I deserve. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Krishna Das Kaviraj ki jai, Lord Nityananda ki jai.